Thursday, the 28th of June, Rabbi Moshe Fima, our mission in this world.
In the beginning of last week's parsha, when the Torah tells us the parshas of Torah Aduma, the Torah says, Zoyz Chukas the Torah, and the Medrash brought down in Rashi explains that the reason why it says Zoyz Chukas the Torah, and it doesn't say Zoyz the Torah, is the fisher of Sotim V'Umas Ha'Elam B'Nim Es Yisrael. The Goyim and the Sotim, they ask Klal Yisrael, and like the Medrash says, they make fun of Klal Yisrael, and they ask them, what's the sense in such a mitzvah like Torah Aduma, that the person who's in charge of preparing the Torah Aduma, he becomes Tomei, and the Torah Aduma itself is used to be Metari people. To explain the question a bit more, we know the Sgan Kohen Gadol, it was his job in order to prepare the Eifer HaPor, and the Sgan Kohen Gadol, when he used to prepare it, he used to become Tomei automatically, and the logic over here was hard to understand how exactly it works. Even though the Sefer Chinuch, when he explains the mitzvah, he did give a reason, and the other Midrashim, the other Mefarshim also give some reasons that explain how it really works. And we know even in this world, practically, when a child becomes dirty and the mother washes the child, the mother's hands are dirty and the child is clean. So it's not like it's, there's no logic at all involved. I once heard from Moshe Wolfson in America. He explained the question as follows. Moshe Wolfson once explained that the question from the Ummah Sa'ilim was something completely different. The question they asked is, how is it that the Sgan Kohen Gadol, who's one of the most important people of Klal Yisrael, he had to be roy to go l'Israel Aflem, he had to be roy to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And he had to be Metame himself in order to make Tara for who? For the different people involved, for the different people who became comic for different reasons, that they weren't the cream of Klal Yisrael. How is it possible that he should be Metame himself in order for them? And on this, we take an answer to them. We don't know, it's a chok. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love to us is at such a level that we really don't understand why is it that he's prepared that people on a high level should be metamin themselves in order to do it, but that shows the great love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for Klal Yisrael. We see from the last week's parsha that sometimes one has to be prepared to be metamin himself to a certain extent in order to help even those parts of Klal Yisrael that aren't on the highest level involved. In Parshas Lech Lecha, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Avraham Avinu, he told him, Lech Lecha Me'altzecha, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Avraham Avinu at the age of 75, and he told him to go. We know Avraham Avinu was very worried that three things, he should lose on three things. The first thing he was worried about was about Purvu. And according to Drush, we can understand that the only Purvu that Avraham Avinu had at the time was Vamecha Eruz HaMudecha. He was worried once he was established over there in Choron, and we know what was Avraham Avinu doing when he was in Choron. He was busy, Ve'esanefesh Asa'osu B'choron. He was busy over there being Mavzi Klal Yisrael, being Mavzi the different people to recognize what is a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And he was worried that I lose on Purvu, he was worried that I lose out his Talmidim. Once he'll move, maybe all the Talmidim will follow him. The next thing he was worried about was that the way, like the Rashi explains over there, a journey makes the person lose part of his money. And obviously, Avraham Avinu wasn't only worried about the amount of money he'll have in his account, he was more worried about that he'll have less money, he'll be able to do less for Yiddishkeit. And the third thing he was worried about was Shem. He was worried about his name. When somebody goes to different journeys, once the person is a well-established country and a well-established city, then the person is obviously not worried about his name. Everyone knows him. But once he'll have to go to another place where nobody will know him, he was worried what exactly people, whether he'll be able to have the same effect. Like we're sure, Avraham Avinu wasn't worried about the COVID issue over here. He was worried about using his name, the name of Avraham Avinu, which is a name that Baruch Hashem is still announced our world today, was worried that the name should not lose out, that his through his name, his ashpah that he had in Klal Yisrael will not lose out at all. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him, and he told him, you're right, even though you're 75, and you say, it's about time that you should go out to the pension, it's about time to relax, or at least you should be able to sit in the same place where you are, in order to continue to do what you're doing till then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says there's no limits. Even the age of 75 you should go, and you were worried that you'll be able to, that you'll lose your effects of being mechanic other people, other rabbis. You should know you'll only gain out of it. And like we know that what Avraham Avinu did after 75 is mentioned in the Torah much more than he did before 75. Because since he went with the right Tzibur and the right Bitachin, he didn't lose out on anything. And other rabbis, he went on a different stage and he went with Mesirus Nefesh, he was prepared to go out in order to fulfill your soul. The Gemara says in the Dorim, the Gemara asks one of the most difficult questions. Why is it that Avraham Avinu was punished? For every grandfather to see his grandchildren in exile is a punishment for him. Why Klal Yisrael has to be in Mitzrayim 210 years, that's a different question. But why did Avraham Avinu have to have the pain of seeing his grandchildren in Mitzrayim for 210 years? The Gemara explains different answers given there. The Rabbi Yochanan Amar. Rabbi Yochanan answers the reason why Avraham Avinu was punished was b'nei shehifrish b'nei odom milikonis tachas kanfei Hashchina. He had the opportunity to bring people closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu. He had the opportunity to be mekarev people, and the ma'aseh he wasn't mekarev them. Like we know, when he went to save Lot, he told the kings over there, tein li ha'nefesh, give me back Lot, baruchush kach loch, and all the different people who were captured during the war, take it all for yourself. And like the Ran explains over there, and Avraham Avinu went and he gave these people that he could have taken as part of the Rechush, all the Avodim, all the Shvachis that were over there, the Ilu Ikwan La'atzman. And if Avraham Avinu would have kept those slaves, those Shvachis, the Avodim for himself, he would have bought them tachas kamfei shchina, would have been mekarev them to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And even though we know that the reason why Avraham Avinu did not want to take the rechush was also a reason l'shem shemayim, he had a very good reason. He was scared that nobody should say anoichi eshalkes Avraham. They shouldn't say that we made Avraham Avinu wealthy. We gave him so many slaves, so many workers, so many cattle that was over there, and because of us he became wealthy. But since at that time he shouldn't have made the Cheshbon Shemayim, that they should think about who they did make wealthy or not, and since Lamaisi he had some Neshamas under his hand, that if he would have dealt with them, he would have been able to save them, and since he didn't save them, that was the reason why Klal Yisrael had to suffer for 210 years, the Tzar of Avraham Avinu sin, and Klal Yisrael suffering, which wasn't only a physical suffering, it was a spiritual suffering. Because at the end of the day, when Klal Yisrael were in Mitzrayim, we know they went down to the lowest of the lowest level. But since Avraham Avinu did not utilize when he had the moment to bring them closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu, spiritually, Kadosh Baruch Hu, mitzvah connected mitzvah, show them, I will take away your children at time, and I'll give you the tzar, what it means when a child does not come closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu. I once heard from somebody who heard from Rabbi Chanan himself, when he was in America before the war. And they asked Rabbi Chanan Wasserman the following question. They asked Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, there are certain things that we don't understand. When Klal Yisrael go through different periods of suffering and pain, at least we understand that we don't understand. But when they asked Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, what is the svara, what is the logic in what was going on in communism? Communism that was going on was, at the end of the day, the only koyach that lost out of communism, that felt that they were losing something, that was the Kadosh Baruch Hu kavyachol ba'atzmo. There were millions of Jews who had no keshet to Yiddishkeit at all, and the Metzius says that after the first generation, the second generation didn't even feel they were missing something. They weren't like physically hurt over there that they were missing something. And they asked over there, they asked Rabbi Chanan, what's this far over here? Why should a Kadosh Baruch Hu want to do such a punishment for himself that so many people that could be Meshabedim, that could serve him, would not be prepared to be Meshabedim to serve him? Rabbi Chanan put his head down on his hand for an hour, and they thought Rabbi Chanan had fallen asleep. When Rabbi Chanan picked up his head, he answered the following words. At the beginning, the first thoughts that I had was, that could be for some reason that are above us, could be, like Jboku decided to be master upon it. He wanted to turn his head away from that part of Europe that was called the Soviet Union, wanted to turn his head away from it, in order, for Cheshbon Yisrael, we don't know. But Rabbi Chanan said, you should know, that at the end of the day you'll see that Emet Hashem, the children, the grandchildren, will all Emet Hashem come back. It's the same meaning of a nefesh asher also b'chon, and it's the same reason that we see that Avraham Avinu, just like Avraham Avinu, had to utilize every moment that he could have had in order to save Klal Yisrael, in order to save every Yiddish and Shom, to bring them closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Where he didn't bring them closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu, it was a time on him. Even though he was so old, it was a time on him why he didn't do it. There's a famous story of the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim was once on a train traveling through Poland, and the olden days when people used to travel through big towns, when the Rabbonim used to travel in big towns, the different people from the Kehillah would stop at the train station when there would be a time the train would stop, and they'd all go and greet the Gadol Hadar. The Maram Shapiro was then traveling with the Chofetz Chaim, and when they came to the train station in Warsaw, the Maram Shapiro says there's hundreds of Yidden standing on the platform over there to greet the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim looked at the Maram Shapiro, not knowing where he wants with him. He says, they came to greet the Gadol Hadar, but the Mesavri came to greet you. I'm only a little poshut of Balabas, so the Zichah not coming to greet me. The Maram Shapiro said, you know what, at the end of the day they came to meet the Chofetz Chaim and not me. At least go and make yourself look as if you're a Gadol Hadar. When the Chofetz Chaim heard that, with his Yira Shemaim by head, the Chofetz Chaim goes, what do you mean, I'm going to become a Baal Gaiver? It's a very Gaiver. So he says, become a Baal Gaiver. When the Chofetz Chaim heard that, he got even more nervous. He goes, what do you mean, I'm going to become a Baal Gaiver? It's not an Aveira. So the Maram Shapiro told him, relax, so make an Aveira. Over here, the Chofetz Chaim was saying, he goes, what, you have Aveira, stuck in him. And then the Maram Shapiro told him, look, you have an opportunity to make hundreds of Eden happy, and you're worried about a drop of Gehinnom that you're going to get. Immediately, the Chofetz Chaim buttoned himself up and he walked out so that everyone should greet him. It's a story that happened, and any one of us who know who tried to understand the drop of what the Chofetz Chaim was all about, the Chofetz Chaim wasn't playing games. Just like he wrote halachas in Mishnah Brura, this is a halacha that he passed, and that sometimes the person has to be prepared to give away from his Eilam Abad, to give away from his to suffer a bit in order to give a chizuk to different Jews, in order to be mekarev about the Yidden that are there. And we see from Rachel Amenu even a stage further. We saw from Avraham Avinu that during one's lifetime one has to go and give himself away for Kodesh Baruch Hu. We saw from the Chofetz Chaim they want us to give away even the Gehinnom, even part of the Olam above for the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Rachel Amenu, we know that the reason she asked to be buried in Beis Lechem was because she knew Klal Yisrael will be able to pass there and they'll be able to daven by a kever. And we're having to stuff as the Rachel Amenu knew what will happen with Beis Lechem, where Beis Lechem will be nowadays, and the amount of disgrace her cable will receive from the Arab nations around it. But she was prepared to do it, because even after a person left this world, someone who thinks totally about Kodesh Baruch Hu, anything that could bring the care of somebody to Kodesh Baruch Hu, one should be able to do it. There's a famous story. There was one of the famous Rabbonim, one of the last Talmidim from the house of Navardek. His name was Reb Gershon Lippmann. There's a little village not far from Paris. It's called Armentières-en-Brie. And over there, they used to call him the Rabbeinu. I had the schus of meeting him a few times in my life. There was a famous story about him. He was in Avardika. And he learned that in Belarus, in the Bargudok. And he never, during the war years, he was in one of the infamous camps called Auschwitz. Once, when Liberation Day became, Baruch Hashem, they didn't have anything else, so they had to do at the present moment. The Germans had left. So Reb Gershon Lippmann found some scraps of a Gemara, and he went into one of the halls over there. There was plenty empty space, not in the same Rabbi over there in Auschwitz after the war. And he started sitting there. When one of the American soldiers walked into the camp, they see a skeleton of a boy sitting there, learning the Gemara. He was a Jewish soldier, and he turns to him and he goes, what are you doing? He goes, I opened the yeshiva over here. He turns around, this American soldier turns around to Rav Gershon Lipman, he goes, "No, Baruch Hashem, I see you opened the yeshiva. Who's the Rosh Yeshiva?" He goes, "I'm the Rosh Yeshiva." He tries to see another person in the room who maybe would be the student. He goes, "Is this the office of the yeshiva or is this the whole yeshiva?" Where the Talmidim, he goes, "I'm a Talmud here also." He goes, "I understand that every yeshiva needs a fundraiser." He goes, "I'm the fundraiser also." And then Rav Gershon Lipman stands up, and when he felt there was a tinge of leitzonus in the words of the American soldier, he looks at the American soldier in the eye and he goes, "Listen, I want to tell you something. You might have come from America over here, and you might be the one that liberating over here. But you should know, our job in this world is never to think of all the different stages there are that has to be taken care of. Our job in this world is to do. And if the second we will liberate over here, open the yeshiva, you'll see Mitzvashem, the yeshiva will grow. And you'll see what Tzlach will have over here." The person got so taken back. He told Rav Gershon, "Now your yeshiva is a bit small and I'm still serving in the army. But do me a favor, when your yeshiva grows a bit and when I leave the army," he gave him his address. And he goes, you send me a letter when your yeshiva is there, and then I'll be more than happy to come and join your yeshiva." The man said, like an avadika, Rav Gershon Lipman didn't lose that paper. And Yitzhak sent him a letter, and he's one of the families that are now there in Amatir and Briz, and he's his grandchildren over there at Baruch Hashem. Rav Gershon Lipman did not mean one second what he said as a joke. It was like we see in this week's parsha with the inyan of Pinchas. It was the love of a Kodesh Baruch Hu that one had. Even we know the halacha is by Kenan, by halacha the Einberin came. That even though there's a halacha that Kenan breaking, but when someone makes the chil Hashem barabim, you can go and kill him. Or if someone already comes to ask a shayla, it means it's burnt in this. It's not like burning in his insides, exact the love of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, if he still has time to ask a shayla, the person has no right to do it. Pinchas was the madrega, not Stamuza, he was the one who's mamshit the Torah. That's why Pinchas of Aliyo, the love that he had for Yiddishkeit was such a burnt in him that he did everything they had to do. And here also, Rav Gershon Lipman was being in the Levadika that he was, he couldn't think of anything else he had to do. The second he had the opportunity was he went and did for Yiddishkeit. One other story of Rav Gershon Lipman, Zechatadik Devorcha. One of the other stories that happened to him when he was in Auschwitz. Since he was in a Valdika, in Auschwitz he also behaved like in a Valdika, and the SS officers couldn't manage to see such a thing. And they once called him in and they decided to make fun of him, and when he walks into the room, he almost lost himself. He sees a table laid with food that was so scarce over there, they couldn't imagine in Auschwitz such food. There was meat and there was Yedava Acha meat and other things. He couldn't believe what was going on over there. But then his eye got struck by something else. He sees what was used as a tablecloth, a talis was being used as a tablecloth. Over here already all machines got turned off. To see that the tablecloth, a talis, was being used as a tablecloth to hold over Achamit, even though there was some major office over there, without thinking a second, he pulled off the talis, he starts kissing the talis, apologizing. They were so disgraced in such a manner over here. And he starts mumbling, begging forgiveness, crying. And then he realized what had happened. He realized that this was his end, because while he was pulling it off, the food and the plates and everything fell on the SS officers that were around him, and he realized this will be his end, but he realized he didn't have a choice. He didn't even have time to think whether it was the right thing or the wrong thing. He went immediately and he did whatever he could do in order to be master of a bit of the covered shemaim that was involved over there. Lamaister, in the end, the Germans realized there was a waste of bulletin, and they decided to beat him up, that he came out more not alive than alive. And Baruch Hashem, he still had the schus to be mekarev hundreds of thousands of Yidin Lavim Shbashmaim. The Gemara says, the Hillel, Mechayev Yisanim. Hillel Zokim, with all the poverty that he had, he was well prepared in order to go, in order, his love for learning was as such, that even if it was a paying entrance fee, he managed to avoid that, to hear the shir without paying the entrance fee. The mindset in our generation, where all of us, being so much marred by Kovit Shemaim, we're all trying to do to utilize the momentum in order to bring as much Kovit Shemaim that they are. I'd like to share with you a couple of stories that have passed through me over my years in the Soviet Union that Poshet will show you how even these neshamas that come out from these faraway places, how much they are mechayev us, people that have the schus to be bought in a regular Makim Torah. There was one Seyid in Kiev. One of the best jobs of mine was working a Chevra Kedisha. It was the most relaxing job that a person could have. And I got a phone call. Somebody asked me, do you work in the Chevra Kedisha? I told him, yeah. The person says, I plan to die within a couple of hours. Can you please come over? Such a phone call, you don't get every day. So I told him, he sounded like father. He was getting from anywhere. I told him, do me a favor, give me your address and wait till I come. We'll discuss how you're planning to die. When I come over there, there was an old man. He was close to 90. And he was looking, not the worst situation that I've seen in my life. And I said, you know, it looks like you have more than a couple of hours left. What's going on over here? He goes, he looks like you don't understand. He goes, no, the problem is, I just came back from the hospital last night, and they told me that I have one of the machlas, and I have yana machla, and therefore, I would not like to suffer, I'll have to die. So I told him, I tried explaining to him, thinking they were scared of the pain that were involved. I said, you never know, just like Kutch Bokha gave you, could take away from you. And he looked at me as if he fell off a roof. He goes, it looks like you don't understand what I'm trying to say. He goes, listen to me carefully, don't understand. He goes, in 1917, when communism began, my father, who was a Jew, who was Shoyer Torah and Mitzvah, called me in, and he told me, we know that there's two chalakim in Yiddishkeit. There's a chalak called Ben Odom Lamokim, serving the Kutch Bokha between one and Hashem. And there's another chalak of Avodas Hashem, which is called Ben Odom Lechaveiro, between one and one's friend. My father told me, since communism began, it'll be almost impossible to keep Ben Odom Lamotem. But there's one chelik that will be possible to keep that the communists won't even realize, that's called Yiddishkeit, which is called Ben Odom Lechaveiro. And I'm telling you to be, my son, they should be double careful that at least in the chelik that's called Ben Odom Lechaveiro, you should be extra careful over here that you should not hurt anyone. The person then told me was close to 80 years that have gone by since that day. He goes, whenever I offended somebody, I always called up to apologize, and even if the person went away, I wrote them a letter. But now that I came back from the hospital, they told me the machla that I have, I'm scared I might lose my mind, and I might do something to somebody that I will not be able to ask him afterwards for forgiveness. And if that's the case, I'm being the vata on the living, I'm prepared to take away my life. This is the koyach of the yid, that a person is around, a person is always prepared to do something and utilize one's moment. There was once a boy, his name was Yaakov Lev, his name was, he came from the city called Vitebsk. We were once Shabbos in Medjibush, we were 2 weeks during winter camps, we went to Medjibush, but there's a beautiful place of Medjibush over there. And during the, we learned two stars a day, and we had a bit of fun in the evening, in order that the children should not be at home during vacation. Shabbos afternoon, it was Parshas Shmos, we were learning Hilchos Tshuva of the Rambam, and after the class, one little boy, this boy was 13 years old at the time, he comes over and says, I've got a very difficult question. My question is, does one have to do Tshuva on, I told him, listen, I don't have time, now ask me later. L'maisa Motzei Shabbos, when we were eating Lava Malkin, the newly built Medjugorje shul over there, where the Baal Shem Tov used to have in the same place, and I see this boy sitting and crying. I call him over here, I can lay some over here. Why are you crying? Kids, them all have a little fight together, maybe someone upset you. He goes, no, it's regarding the question. I said, what happened? One of the other teachers that was with me was another Jew from Russia, who was afraid of the Tshuva himself, and since I didn't answer the boy the question, he went to ask this other teacher, and this other teacher, since he was afraid of the Tshuva himself, he decided he'll be mechanech this boy the way it has to be. And he goes, what was the boy's question? The boy's question was, does one have to do a general tshuva, have charos on everything that I've done, or no? Just like each avera was done one by one has to do tshuva for each avera that one did in the past. This teacher was a toughie, and he goes, what do you think it is? When you have averas, you do one by one. And when it comes to tshuva, you want to have an easy way of it, of course you have to do it. Of course you have to do tshuva on all generally. I told the boy, so what are you crying about? The boy said, I've been thinking for the past many hours, but I can't remember all the various that I've done. And that's why I'm crying. The time was around 10 o'clock at night. We were fought in a very important city, and I told him, you know what? There's a tzaddik over here called the Baal Shem Tov. You can go over to him, Dav, and ask him that he should help you out. He's good at taking care of questions. 3 o'clock in the morning, when we finished in Lava Malka, when we put the children to sleep, as responsible educators, we went to check that everyone's in bed. We see his bed still missing. At first I was going a bit angry, where did he go to? And then I remembered you would send him. Even though 5 hours had passed, I said, you know, maybe he's still there, who knows? I went over there, the boy was still crying, a 13-year-old child was still on his crying over the chin, davening to a Kodesh Baruch Hu that I should help him out. This is a child that joined school in September. This was the end of December, 4 months had gone by, and this child was crying because Nebuch, what did he do about his tshuva? He might not remember one of the various I had done. There was another, I'd like to finish off with another story. There was one of the group of children that we had, there were the Finsky boys. There were twin boys, and they came with the older sister to school, also during September. The older sister, since her father was a non-Jew, she wore a cross. And the boys were regular boys. The Meister during the winter holidays, they went home. I get a phone call from the mother screaming over the phone, what is this chutzpah? What sort of education do you give? You teach children to rebel against the parents. What's going on over here? I'm not going to let them go back. I said, just let me know exactly what happened over here before you start shouting. It's not our way of working at all. He goes, what do you mean what happened? Our children came home from, they traveled 16 hours by train from Pinsk to Jodina. When they came home, they knocked on the door and they told my husband and myself that we're not entering the house until Dad gets rid of all the different crosses that he has in the house and all the different icons. And they said, we're learning in a Jewish school now, and that's it, we're not going in. We tried to explain to them, we're not going to dictate the life. They stood outside, it was the late winter then. They stood outside for many, many, many hours until it was literally a sakana that the father had no choice. He got rid of everything, he gave it to the neighbor. And the mother was screaming over there. I told her, one thing you can be sure, it's nothing to do with me. And Mitzvah, when they'll come back, we'll punish them like this, and I'll remember it for good, how to behave when they come home. The mother was all relaxed, Baruch Hashem. Finally, she was educating someone over here. Right, the children came back. I said, Luba, that was all the girls. I said, what are you doing over here? She goes, what do you mean? You taught us a week before we went home. It was the parsha of Rachel and the Tzotzim. And we explained to them during one of the Shurim that one of the reasons why Rachel was punished, even though she did the right thing, she wanted to take the Avodah Zarah away from her parents, but she shouldn't have done it in such a way of doing without the permission. They said we wanted to copy Rachel only in one point and on the other point. That's why we wanted to get rid of the Tzotzim, but we didn't want to do without permission. That's why we asked it. These are children that Poshet had no major Keshet Yitzchak at all. These are the Rishonis, like I said before, from the Shem of Hanan, that he promised that they'll come back. However, all of us have to realize that not only being in different parts of the world, one has to have this kind of a person, wherever he is, the same time as that Kodesh Baruch Hu will demand from us, and Kodesh Baruch Hu will demand from us much more than he demands from these children who, this week we see how important it is for the Torah to mention, like Pinchas ben Elozah ben Aaron HaKohen, right? So you see, since the Torah mentions it, it means there is a problem when you've also got a Zaydi who was over the Avodah Zarah. And we're dealing over here with Yiddish and the Shamas that never, they have a lot more non-Jewish blood in them than Jewish blood. Poshet Baruch Hashem, the Halacha says, they go according to mother's line, and that's what the Shema Torah mitzvahs. And we see, Takia, that sometimes, even though it means that we're losing out from our own Ruchnias, like we saw in the last week's Parsha, and we learn that from Avinu also, that every single one of us has to utilize what's maximum kaychas in order to be Ma'al B'Kovet Shemaim V'Olam. And especially in such a generation like ours, when it's a generation that there's so much tum in the world that's pushing away the Kedusha, if every single one of us will be Ma'al B'Kedusha in any way that we can, that way Mitzvah will help to bring that the Kedusha will be shorted from this world, and now automatically will be Mekar the Gula.